Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What's the difference between smart justice and criminal justice? How can South Dakota expand the use of alternatives to incarceration? And how does the South Dakota Attorney General's Office set the tone for effective diversion programs? Today, for that conversation, we're joined in the SDPB Sioux Falls studio by Heather Smith. She is Executive Director of ACLU of South Dakota. Heather, welcome back.
Thank you.
Also with us, Libby Screen. She's Policy Director of ACLU of South Dakota. Libby, thanks for being here as well.
Hi, thanks for having us.
All right, let's start with the overall reason for this conversation. Is it because that there is an Attorney General election right now that's sort of ramping up the need to educate voters and talk to candidates, or is there more really going on here with this conversation?
I think it's both happening right now. You know, we do know that the Attorney General's race is coming up and that South Dakota will elect a new Attorney General in November 2018. But we also think that right now is just an important time to start talking about criminal justice and start looking at different ways to go forward. As our population increases, as our prison population increases, and as we're looking down the barrel of potentially having to build new prisons in the future.
All right, so we look at the candidate briefing book that the ACLU has put out. And how is that working? You're bringing that to the individual candidates themselves? How are you pushing that out?
Yes, so we've done a few things. Back when we had five potential attorney general candidates, we put together a candidate briefing book to introduce them all to our vision for smart justice and what we think that our criminal justice system should look like in South Dakota. Now that we have got the top two candidates that have been chosen by the major parties, we have sent them each a survey of a candidate questionnaire to ask for their specific positions on the issues. And we've gotten one of those back. We're hoping to get the other one back. And once we've got all that information, we'll start distributing that to the public and to our members to really inform people not just of what the role of the Attorney General is, but also where these candidates stand on the issues.
Let's talk about the big picture of what's not working right now in criminal. We've had lots of conversations on this show about reform in the state from a legislative perspective to what local sheriffs are doing in their own counties to, you know, grants and fundraising to make some of those programs happen. As you see it, what's the big picture of what's still not enough?
Yeah, I think the major issue is that we're focusing so much on incarcerating people and the idea of locking people up for whatever crime they may have committed or may have been charged and, you know, may not have even been committed of yet. But the fact that we just start at incarceration and then work our way through mental health treatment, addiction services, whatever it might be that's impacting that person, we're just starting at the wrong end. So we are looking to adopt a smarter way of thinking about this, which addresses criminal justice issues that solve the problems of crime rather than focusing on punishing people.
When you say we're starting at the wrong end, is that do you see that in the tone of what candidates are saying or political leaders are saying, or do you see that in the statistics that we know that are being released about incarceration in the state?
I think we see it in both. The rhetoric that has been around this so-called tough on crime rhetoric has been really problematic. And I think we see that coming through in our mayoral election. We see it in the governor's race. We see it in virtually every race that's occurring right now in South Dakota and across the nation. This is a hot topic. But I think what people don't understand is that it's not working. If it has worked, we would have solved crime in the 70s under the Nixon administration when we started talking about the war on drugs. It hasn't worked. And there are better, smarter ways to solve the problems of crime, of the actual problems of crime.
Okay, so something's working because it's helping people get elected. So the rhetoric, right? The rhetoric is effective, which would indicate that voters want to hear that rhetoric and it's an important issue to them. But when I read the candidate briefing book, there's some surveys done about what voters want that would sort of say the opposite. Tell us a little bit about what some people have said and how this data was collected.
Yeah, so this is sort of the first of its kind survey that was done, I believe, early in 2017 to really take a comprehensive look at how people actually feel about the criminal justice system. Oversampling people from all political stripes, so that's not, you know, a poll or a survey that's only Democrats or only Republicans. And what was found is that 89% of voters want prosecutors who will support alternatives to incarceration. And that's across the board, every category, every political party. And I think that's really interesting because what you just said, you know, this tough on crime rhetoric it seems that we've thought it was working or that people were responding to it. But when you dig in a little bit deeper and ask questions of how people really feel, it turns out they want to see something different. They want to see better alternatives. And it's incumbent upon our leaders and the people who want to be our leaders to really put the time and effort into thinking about these solutions and to come to the table with innovative ideas rather than relying on old tactics. Mm-hmm.
Are these the survey that we're reading in the candidate briefing book from ACLU of South Dakota, those are national numbers or those South Dakota numbers, or is there a mixture?
It's a mixture. It's okay. States all across the country, including South Dakota.
It seems like from some of the conversations we've had that you would maybe project that South Dakota, although we've certainly talked about some of the racial problems of representation and incarceration several times and some of the efforts being made to address that in Pennington County in particular, that we've had these conversations on this show. But we've also talked very much about Veterans Court and Drug Court. And it seems like maybe South Dakota is slightly ahead of the game in some of those diversion programs. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, I think South Dakota definitely has embraced alternatives and begun to have this conversation, like you said, in terms of drug courts, and even in terms of pieces of legislation that were passed in the past few years, SB 70 and SB 73. So this isn't coming out of nowhere, right? We've made initial steps, and our point of view is that we have to take that farther and that we have to make sure we're committed to seeing how this plays out. You know, real change takes a long time. Right? It's easy to say we're going to be tough on drugs and we're going to arrest people. And then when you show how many people you've arrested, boom, you've got results. Changing the system and changing the way we think is a much longer process. And so that's what we're really working on emphasizing right now.
And sometimes it doesn't work the way we want it to. So some of the people have come forward, especially with school superintendents with juvenile justice reform, have said, hey, there's not enough consequence. We're having, you know, increase in crime because once a kid commits a certain crime, there's no consequence. We don't know what to do with them. How can we adjust that so it's more effective? So let's talk a little bit about victims and sort of how to think about smart justice in a way that also understands that for every crime that is committed, there was a victim who wants some sort of restitution, punishment. If something should happen if you're the victim of a crime.
I think that's, the crimes that involve victims are complicated, but I can tell you as the victim of crime, of a violent crime, I can tell you that I didn't want to see the person incarcerated, that I was looking for mental health treatment and I was looking for addiction services for that person rather than incarceration. So I think the idea that people are going to be incarcerated and then somehow they're going to come out of jail and they're going to suddenly feel, reformed. They're going to have their life back on track. I think that's really misleading. And if we look at what actually happens in prison is that recidivism is a huge problem once people get out, and they're not always given the tools that they need to address the reasons that may have brought them to jail or prison.
And I think what Heather said really speaks to kind of the underlying problem is that there are things that victims of crime want, and those aren't options, right? We are not comprehensively investing in mental health and addiction treatment. And when a victim is given the choice of, well, the perpetrator is either going to walk free with no services and no path to go forward or be incarcerated, that's a false choice. It's the only choice that we're giving them, and it's understandable when a victim feels that way. But when we give the full gamut of choices and we really invest in alternatives, I think that's when we're going to start to see a change, and that's where we're going to start to see a mind shift and better outcomes.
Let's talk a little bit about race, because there are numbers about the racial bias in the criminal justice system, and it seems like a no-brainer that everybody who you ask would say, well, no, we would like to eliminate racial bias in incarceration. And yet that's a deeper, more complex problem. How does someone in an attorney general's office or during an attorney general campaign address that issue and say there's an effective way to move that forward?
I think for us at this point, like you said, people of color are overrepresented in our system. We know, for example, our state population is about 9% Native American, and yet our prison population is about 33% Native American. And what we are saying is not that there's a silver bullet or an easy way to fix this, but I think where candidates and where leaders and attorneys general can start is really with making data publicly available and collecting that data, because we can't know how to fix the problem if we don't know what is happening at each decision point that is resulting in people of color being overrepresented.
What do you mean by that? What kind of transparency would you know, be realistic to sort of say at each decision point?
Absolutely. Things like the decision to arrest, the decision to indict, sentencing recommendations. How do those compare between people of color and people who are white? Who is being put in mental health treatment or addiction treatment programs and who's being sent directly to prison? All of those points are areas at which someone is shuffled either in or out of the criminal justice system. And we don't know exactly what population of people is getting perhaps the benefit of the doubt at certain points and who isn't. And we can't begin to fix the problem until we know that underlying information and just being aware of it.
Do other states collect that information?
Some of them do. I mean, it's kind of a trend that we're starting to see more of that. And there are certainly lower level areas, things like prosecution guidelines. Every state has them. Every attorney's general office has them. So making that sort of thing publicly available is an easy, immediate step that can sort of get the ball rolling.
All right. So how much is publicly available from South Dakota State's attorney general's office now? Where are we at in the continuum?
If you look at the attorney general's website, it is really hard to find information on there. Some of it might be available through sort of freedom of information or open records requests, which is an option. But what we want is really the Attorney General's office to be proactive about it. Put that stuff online in an open format from the beginning so groups don't have to sort of shuffle through the paperwork and request information that may or may not be distributed publicly, right? So it's sort of that front-end work that we'd like to see now and see as a big opportunity for the next Attorney General to start off strong with transparency.
Then you would have issues of privacy as well, which we saw, you know, through the conversation about Marcy's Law, from victims' privacies to, you know, to the privacy of a person who's not been convicted yet.
Absolutely. And I'm not even necessarily talking about case-specific information.
Okay.
Just the general guidelines that the office operates under. What are the sentencing recommendations? What are the policies that govern the office? Those are things that don't infringe on people's privacy, whether they be a victim or a defendant, and can really give us a better sense of how the office operates.
All right. What kind of feedback are you getting from local law enforcement or statewide law enforcement about this this conversation? You said that you sent a request to both candidates. One has responded, still waiting for the other one, which is fairly typical at this, you know, in August, right?
Right.
But how about other conversations that you're having with local sheriffs or law enforcement officers, attorney's office, prosecution, state's attorneys?
I think we are aligned in a lot of ways, in more ways than we are, you know, on the other side of the issue with each other, especially when it comes to law enforcement. Law enforcement want to see a lot of the same stuff. They don't want their prisons and jails to be used as mental health treatment centers. And they also want to make sure that people are safe within their jail and their prison. I think one of the things this campaign can bring about is a way of thinking about smart justice reforms that are really the best for the community, regardless of whether or not it's lawyers, prosecutors, law enforcement, wardens, sheriffs, whoever they may be, just really thinking about community first, solving the instances that lead us to crime rather than thinking about incarceration.
Mm. I'm curious about when we talk about recidivism and about the role of the rest of us. So we have, you know, an obligation to be an informed citizenry, to vote, to have our voices heard by, you know, contacting candidates. But what about this, you know, notion of like business owners hiring people and being more open to conversations about what who should be in a mental health play? There seems to me like there's a broader thing sort of happening here. If so many people are answering the response and saying, hey, we don't want people just being locked up, well, that's on all of us too, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I think one example, like you said, employment, giving a chance to someone who may have a criminal record to get a job. We know that part of recidivism and part of the reason people reoffend is because they have no structure to their day anymore. They don't have a job. They don't have income. And that can lead to some bad results, right? So being the kind of place that encourages people with a record to apply for jobs or to have safe housing away from, you know, people who may have been their cohorts experts or their associates. You know, we shouldn't be branding people with the scarlet F for felon and saying you can't live in this neighborhood and you can't be around these people and be a part of our society anymore, because that's just going to push the cycle along and create more problems. So I do think that we all have a role to play, whether it be big or small, whether you might be a legislator or a small business owner in the community, to really look at how we can bring communities back together and not ostracize people who may have a criminal record.
Yeah. This report available on your website somewhere? How can people access some of these, the numbers and the data?
A lot of the data is on our website, but we can also, you know, share the briefing book if someone's interested. Please feel free to email us at southdakota@aclu.org.
All right. Libby Screen, Heather Smith, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time. Come back again.
Thank you.
Thanks.